This podcast is produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of Overseas Radio Network or broadcast partners. All information provided is for educational purposes only. Before taking action, consult a licensed professional.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Coming up today on Columbia Calling, with me, your host, Richard McCall, we're talking all about the Guajira region and the Wayuu people, the ethnic group from up there in the northeastern corner of Columbia, with anthropologist Sabrina Prioli. So we're talking to an expert who has created her own foundation to maintain and preserve traditional cultures from the mass expansion and market growth that's threatening to undermine the culture of the Wayuu people, and indeed the women of the Wayuu ethnic group there in Colombia. So we're talking Guajira, we're talking travel, we're talking deserts and culture and traditions of a really unknown ethnic group in Colombia. So don't go away, tune in to listen to all about the Hilo Sagrado Foundation with Sabrina Prioli, coming up today on Columbia Calling with me, your host, Richard McCall. Thank you.
The world is a beautiful place, so listen up. The Overseas Radio Network.
We know you want to grow your business and directly engage your customers and clientele. Podcasting is the way to go, and Podfly has your solution. Whether you're a blogger, writer, business owner, entrepreneur, or service provider, Podfly makes it easy for anyone to have a professionally produced and distributed podcast. Get started today at podfly.net, and let's get your message truly heard. Podfly.net, passion for great sounding podcasts.
Ready to learn about a new life overseas? You're at the right place. This is the Overseas Radio Network.
Welcome to the show. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling, and I am today back in Mompox. So if you can imagine, those who know Mompox, you'll imagine me here with a semi-permanent spackle of sweat on my upper lip and in danger of spontaneously combusting into a liquid form due to the heat and the change from Bogota. Bogota is rainy at the moment, it's cold, but I'm up here in Tierra Caliente, the hot zone. Yeah, it's probably going to reach 40 degrees today, and tourists are coming in for the season, so which is nice to see, and Mompox is undergoing quite a big restoration project all the way along the front of the river, right from my personal house in the Plaza de la Concepción, the town's main plaza, all the way up to my little hotel, La Casa Maria. So it'll be ready by Easter week. That's Semana Santa. And it's looking like it's going to be phenomenal. So this will actually place my hotel at the center of everything, because it's the main plaza, main open-air plaza in Mompox, in front of the Magdalena River. So if you can picture that, and those Garcia Marquez lovers out there, this is the imagery about which he writes when he's talking of the Magdalena River and the riverside communities. And of course, for those of you who are interested, read The General in His Labyrinth. The General in His Labyrinth was his first book after winning the Nobel Prize, and so therefore wasn't widely received well, because it's a historical fiction. It's a historical novel, really, about General Bolivar's last trip up the Magdalena River from Honda. So that's 3 hours outside of Bogota, and the first navigable place on the River Magdalena. And he stops in the towns, and of course he says about Mompox, "At times we dream of her, but she doesn't exist." So very evocative, very imaginative, descriptive descriptions of Mompox and the region. And I know many of you are interested, and haven't been. So this is a big call out, a big self-promotion. Come out, check out our website, lacasaamariamomposque.com, and you'll not be disappointed if you're expecting something literary, something sleepy, something colonial, something amazingly preserved. But it is hot. So I'm here. That's the imagery of where I am. And I'm looking out over my colonial tile rooftops, and I can see the belfries of the seven churches from my window. Just to the left is the Magdalena River, a branch of it, and over to the back of the house, we back onto the main street, and then the cemetery further up. So very, very important images, and very important town in Colombian history. The first place to declare absolute independence from Spain, 1806. Everything has happened here. In fact, this is something I'm detailing in my book, The Mompos Project, which is currently in the works. I've written 25,000 words, so you can hold me to that. 25,000 words, hopefully I'll be over 40,000 by the end of the year. And next year I hope to finish sometime 6 months in. So I'm looking for a publisher. Anyway, so if you're out there, come on in, you know, make yourself known. But anyway, that's that. So what's going on? This week we're going to be talking to Sabrina Prioli. So yeah, Sabrina is a social anthropologist from Italy who's been living in Colombia for many years. And just by having studied about the Wayuu people in her studies there in university in Italy, she became fascinated. And when the chance came, her husband was being transferred to Colombia. She came out and has made herself an expert in the Wayuu. The Wayuu are from the Guajira region, which is an unforgiving desert region in the northeast, bordering Venezuela and the Caribbean Sea. The northernmost point of South America, in the Guajira region, it's a cacti desert, but amazing scenery. And of course, the culture. The Wayuu people are largely autonomous from the rest of Colombia. You know, they run their own show there. And so we're going to be talking more with Sabrina about her foundation called Hilo Sagrado. And you can look that up on hilosagrado.org. That's hilosagrado.org. And she's rescuing the culture and the practices of the sort of the women in society there, and their weaving and the traditions. And so you can actually look up the website and see if you like some of the artisanía, some of the handicrafts that these remarkable Wayuu women make. Very worthwhile, and we'll be talking all about the region and all about their practices and culture. In the meantime, so I'm here in Mompos. What I want to talk about, a few things of note this week. But most importantly, the peace talks, which I'm always talking about, but I know that some people don't get all of the information. You know, the mainstream press does not publish it. But the peace talks have entered into the third point of discussion. The third point of discussion here, we've passed, you know, points one and two, and the third point is about drugs, illicit materials. And of course, you know, behind all of this is very interesting, you know, where this is a push for essentially the legalization of drugs, because President Santos has been up there on the world stage talking about it, and perhaps he didn't get the complete cold shoulder that may have been expected from the United States, although, you know, I mean, there will be the principal opponents to this, but there is a belief and a movement in Europe towards legalization. No, I'm not going to say sing the benefits or the negatives of this, but I think it would be a very interesting and very positive move for Colombia, because if it's made legal, then, you know, there are obvious financial benefits, and hopefully it would cut out a bit of the corruption and money laundering and so on and so forth. Not completely, of course, but it would create a change. Anyway, so this is the third point, and I think behind this point is, of course, there's a negotiation by those leaders of the Secretariat, the ruling elite of the FARC. That's the guerrilla group in Havana, the largest guerrilla group in Colombia, who have been fighting the state for over 50 years. I think there's a way they want to ensure that they're not extradited on drugs charges to the United States. I mean, they're savvy to the political machinations of Colombia, so it's very interesting. So you've got to think about that in the same context when we hear what comes out of the talks in Havana this week, and how they think that maybe, you know, they need to sort of start helping the countryside. And really, I mean, it comes back to agrarian reform, which was the first point on the agenda. The second point being political participation, which has caused a lot of rifts in Colombian society now. But the third point, we're talking about the eradication or how to address the drugs issue in Colombia, I think it would be best called. So that's a very interesting topic. And if you can read things, and I'm sure The Economist and other worthy and worthwhile publications will be printing articles on this. And I think at some point I'll be writing a blog about that. And if you want to keep up to date on what's going on in my blog, that's richardmccall.com. And of course, you can always check up on past interviews if you're interested in Colombia Calling. We've had a 25, 26 interviews so far, and you can check that out on ColombiaCallingRadio.com as well. I've got the whole list there of who's been visiting, who's been interviewed. We've had some very notable things, and I actually have some good ones for the future too. I'm lining up some very interesting people for the future. So don't go away. We'll start talking with Sabrina Prioli, the social anthropologist who has her own foundation, Hilo Sagrado, all about the Guajira and the Wayuu people and their culture. This is a very interesting show about, I'm not promoting ethno-tourism because I don't like the term, but I've used it out there so that most of you can understand, ethno-tourism. But it's about protecting a really just incredibly special, incredibly isolated and therefore preserved culture that's in danger of changing. So, yes, this is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Don't go away, and we'll be right back with Sabrina. Thank you.
OverseasRadio.com, broadcasting from Panama to Paris and beyond.
Okay, you're not stupid. You see the handwriting on the wall. You're thinking about joining the millions of Americans who have already left the country. But where do you go? You don't want to make the mistake of jumping from the frying pan into the fire. You need accurate info to make one of the most important decisions of your life. You need EscapeTheUSANow.com. You don't want to have regrets because your expat country collapsed due to crime, conflict, disease, famine, natural disaster, scarcity, war, or a government gone bad. Only at EscapeTheUSANow.com will you discover the handful of countries that offer true freedoms and unbelievable opportunities that most people could only dream of. EscapeTheUSANow.com is the information you cannot afford not to have. Information that took over 30 years to research, costing hundreds of thousands of dollars, with more than a quarter of a million miles traveled. For less than $2.50 per month, you can have what may be the most life-saving information you have ever obtained. EscapeTheUSANow.com, so you don't jump from the frying pan into the fire.
Have you always dreamed of living abroad, but you are afraid it might be difficult? JustLanded.com helps you make the move. The free information on JustLanded.com helps you get a job, find a house, and a good school for your children. You can also meet other expats in our online community. Visit www.JustLanded.com and find out how easy it is to live your dream abroad. That's JustLanded.com.
You've got questions about Colombia, and Escape Artist has answers. Is Colombia a good fit for me and my plans? How do I buy a house? Find a job? Find a doctor? Start a business? Invest in real estate? What should I know to better appreciate its history, its culture, its opportunities? What is it really like to be an expat in Colombia? You'll find your answers at colombia.escapeartist.com. Your complete and trusted guide for living, working, playing, investing, and retiring in Colombia. That's Colombia.escapeartist.com.
You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network, the exclusive online radio station for the expatriate community.
And we're back, folks. This is Colombia Calling. I'm your host, Richard McCall. And as mentioned before, we're talking to an expert in the Guajira region. Her name is Sabrina Prioli. She's an Italian socio-anthropologist. For 4 years, she's been running her own foundation called the Fundación Hilo Sagrado, working to empower the women, the female community of the Wayuu people in the Guajira, the Wayuu Wayuu are the indigenous people who live up in the northeastern corner of Colombia, bordering Venezuela. It's a desert region. It's ethnically incredibly rich. It's an anomaly from the rest of Colombia in reality. So I'm very happy to have this expert on the Guajira and the Wayuu here. Sabrina, welcome to the show.
Hi, welcome to all.
Thank you very much, Sabrina. Now, listen, why did you get so interested in the Guajira and the Wayuu people?
Well, I'm a socio-anthropologist.
Yes.
So I was studying sociology, especially anthropology in Rome, in the University of Rome. And it was a book with a brief description of this ethnic group.
Yes.
And so I was immediately interested in this group.
Mm-hmm.
So after 20 years, I came in Colombia because my spouse had to come here. And so I came also and immediately wanted to go to visit this region.
Yes.
Without, knowing Spanish, knowing anything. So just with my daughter, she was 10 years old,
mm-hmm.
we decided to go. And alone, and it was an adventure because, as you told, this region is really a deserted place for people want to intrepid or visitors, I can
yeah.
tell, because it's very difficult for tourists there.
Yes.
And so I wanted to visit this ethnic group. And immediately I had, an impact with the women, with their artisan craft.
Yeah.
I'm interested in artisan,
mm-hmm.
in handicraft, because I think the handicrafts are the expression of a culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but we are losing this concept of handicraft. With, my foundation say, in a world of mass production, the touch of the hand has value.
Mm-hmm.
And this is true, because everything is a massification of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So when I arrived, I saw these women, their silence, it was incredible. With their silence and with their hands, they could express their feeling,
mm-hmm.
during their bag, during their artisan craft.
Mm-hmm.
And so of course, this is a region really extremely poor. And so I decided to do something for those women and the children. And so with my experience, I decided to found a foundation.
Yes. And this foundation you've been running it for 4 years, and it's really because of your background. And 20 years after you studied, and then the luck that your husband had coming to work in Colombia, how have you found the Wayuu people? How have they received you?
Well, at the beginning it was difficult because for them, the white people are foreigners.
Mm-hmm.
The same Colombian are foreigners. And so at the beginning it was difficult for it wasn't just the language. Because, I mean, of course, I couldn't speak Spanish very well.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that the women, they don't talk so much.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to understand their silence, their way to move. And so it was difficult, the culture, the impact.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I had experiences also before with other rural and indigenous communities. So it wasn't very new for me.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Wayuu was very, very difficult at the beginning. And not only for me, of course, also for them.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. of course, also they had to trust me.
Yes.
Because this is a region with a lot of exploitation.
Yes. Yes, and very interesting, because you say even Colombians from beyond the Guajira are foreigners, and you coming in as an Italian, a European, white lady, blonde hair, you're really going to stand out.
Yeah, and in fact, once happened to me, a very, very nice, well, very funny story, because I was in the market, street market,
yeah.
I would say, just for Wayuu,
yes.
Just for indigenous Wayuu, and I'm blonde and white, and so once in a moment, a man were close to me, and he told me, You are an albino. An albino.
Well, to them you are.
Yeah. And I said, no, because I know that for them, albino are like witches. Like. And so I said, no, please. And then, no, it was, following me. You are an albino. So it was, it was an experience like, oh my God.
But it's an interesting experience because, while he doesn't plan, he's not threatening you, but it could, if you're a witch, their belief system in the Wahiera, the Wayuu people, is very strong. They're very, very motivated by the mysticism of the desert and and the figures and the symbolism. Perhaps you could share with us a couple of the beliefs of the Wayuu people.
Well, the first, the first beliefs and practice, I can tell, is very interesting because it's about women. Mm-hmm. Puberty is not very important among boys, mm-hmm. but girls are exposed to rituals as 20 years when they have 20 years old, mm-hmm. or when they start menstruating. Mm-hmm. So what happened? Those mm-hmm. girls are isolated mm-hmm. from the rest of the community. The girls are obligated to get an haircut, shaving.
Yeah, they have the head shaved.
Yes, okay. Yes. And they have to, they have to rest in an hammock, mm-hmm. hung, mm-hmm. and close to the house. They can stay just with the mother and mm-hmm. with a few girls. Mm-hmm. And they have a special diet, vegetarian diet,
really?
Called jaguapi.
A jaguapi,
yeah.
Okay.
And they have to bath frequently.
Uh-huh.
And then, during this isolation, uh-huh. they have the possibility to learn how to wait.
Uh-huh.
So this is the moment when they really learn the technique.
Mm-hmm.
Techniques are really, really difficult.
Yeah.
And so what happened? Now they are losing these traditions.
Yes.
So for that reason, the girls, they cannot learn very well how to weave.
So this, we're going to talk a little bit later about the products that the Wayuu make, and they're very fashionable weaving and the hammocks and the mochilas, the bags. But so during this time of puberty is the really the key time where the girls learn to weave, not beforehand.
Well, they can start also before,
okay.
Of course.
Okay.
When I go in Guajira, there are little girls, 5-6 years old, making their small mochila.
Yeah.
But the real technique, to do an hammock, they take almost 6, sometimes 7 months.
7 months to make a hammock.
Yeah, 4-7 months.
Wow.
An hammock.
Okay.
So imagine a girl learning all the technique to do a very hammock here, that is called the chinchorro. So of course during this isolation they have time to learn, and they can do just that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, so,
it's a very very technical, it's very detailed, and we're sitting here in Sabrina's house, and she's got lots of the weaving all around us, and if I can just say, the beautiful tapestries and the mochilas and the chinchorro, which is a hammock, it's really quite special. I've been led to understand that aside from the puberty and the weaving, that there's also an interesting practice about the funeral ritual.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this culture, the Wayuu, they believe that the life cycle doesn't end with death,
mm-hmm.
but there is a relationship with their bones.
Uh-huh, with their
bones.
So
what happened? The parents of the death, they acted in a certain way, in a way that the cadaver is buried.
Sorry. It's okay.
With personal belongings.
Uh-huh.
I saw the personal. This is incredible.
You've seen a burial take place.
I saw. They save this. They save something
mm-hmm.
in their house,
mm-hmm.
but on the floor.
Yes.
And then when they have to use for the death,
mm-hmm.
are some fabric,
mm-hmm.
old like 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
They have a special beliefs.
Yeah.
And so then after you know, I know, I don't know, 4 years. It depends of
the person and the family.
It depends of the cadaver.
Okay.
How many years take to become bones, bones.
So they bury it to decompose.
Yeah.
And then once the flesh and all of the sort of bodily material has gone, so it's just so that the cadaver is now just bones.
Yes. The body is exhumed.
Exhumed. That's a difficult one.
Yeah.
Exhumed.
Is incinerated.
Yeah.
And then is put into a ceramics.
Uh huh.
The body, you know, the bones, come back in the village.
Uh-huh.
There is a big celebration.
Yes.
Where, you know, the body lives again in the village.
Okay.
Taking all the peace, all the, you know, all the spirit of the body come, yes, taking all this, the peace,
yes,
the peaceful.
So
for the village.
Okay.
Okay.
And where do they put this vase or this urn?
In the you know, close to the, they usually have the reunion, the meeting, in a special place called Enramada.
Enramada.
Yes, this is just a big place with a roof,
mm-hmm,
just a roof, mm-hmm, open.
Yeah,
place
know,
open,
yeah, yeah.
Where the people take their hammock and they, mm-hmm, have their talking. They call charlas.
Yeah, they're the sort of meetings.
Yeah, it's a place meeting,
okay, meeting
in
place,
an open space, but with a roof.
Uh-huh.
And then this body, mm-hmm, is again and finally
buried
yes,
again,
in the cemetery.
And cemetery.
In cemetery.
Absolutely fascinating. Absolutely fascinating, these practices that we're learning about. We're going to come back in the second segment and continue talking about the Wayuu and the Guajira with Sabrina Prioli, an Italian socio-anthropologist, expert in the Wayuu and the Guajira. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling.
Pack your bags and explore the world with us. You're listening to the Overseas Radio Network.
This is Jason Hartman, and I want to welcome you to the Jet Setter Show blogcast, an audio version of our written blog at jetsettershow.com. You can find the full-length podcast at jetsettershow.com or on iTunes, where we interview thought leaders and experts on exploring lifestyle-friendly destinations worldwide. Here is today's blogcast.
Thank you, Jason. It seems almost silly to ask, but if you're going to be living abroad, why wouldn't you want to learn the language? Do you want to make life more difficult for yourself? If you're going to the time, expense, and risk of living abroad, give yourself the best chance for success by actually being able to communicate with your new neighbors, at least on some level of proficiency. A recent article in Escape from America magazine caught our attention. In it, writer Paul Allen wrote about his experience at a conference in Vienna, attended by folks from all over Europe and the Middle East. Allen was amazed at the level of English skill exhibited by attendees who were using it as their second or even third language. Yes, English is still the language of business, but that sentiment is not going to do you much good when you're trying to buy a bar of soap in Managua. Don't be the ugly American who thinks the rest of the world should bend to your accident of birth. Allen went on to quote a 2005 European Commission study, which reported that the following percent of adults in these countries were able to converse in English. Sweden, 85%, Denmark, 83%, Netherlands, 79%, and Luxembourg, 66%. Add to these amazingly high numbers that over 50% speak English in Finland, Slovenia, Austria, Belgium, and Germany. Kind of makes us look inadequate, huh? A Dutch friend who Allen spoke with told him that she believes that American television had a great influence, since the shows run with Dutch subtitles rather than being dubbed. A last tidbit for you. English is the third most spoken language in the world, after Mandarin Chinese and Spanish. Americans planning on living abroad in a Central American country, take heed. They speak Spanish there. For more, visit jetsettershow.com. For the Jet Setter Blogcast, I'm Will Weeks.
Thanks for listening to this audio blog, and please see disclaimers and important information at the website.
You're tuned in to OverseasRadio.com, the station to help you reach your dream destination.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, your host, and we're here with Sabrina Prioli, an Italian socio-anthropologist, and I have trouble with that word, but anyway, socio-anthropologist, an expert in the Guajira region, the desert region up in the northeast of Colombia, If you're coming to Colombia and you've got some time, I thoroughly recommend this area. It's a real adventure. It's very little infrastructure. It's something that needs to be organized and planned, and you can do this along the Caribbean coast from cities like Cartagena, Riohacha, which is the departmental capital, the Colombian departmental capital, because the Wayuu people have a different capital in the Guajira. But you can get out there and you're really going to see something different. And I mean, it's a very special, very preserved, autonomous desert region of Colombia, and the Wayuu people, that's spelled W-A-Y-U-U, are incredibly, they're independent, really, of Colombia. They have their own laws, they have their own society, and of course, with the lack of infrastructure, it remains this way. We've been talking to Sabrina about the practices, about the beliefs, and so on, and we've been hearing some really interesting things about the funeral process, and of course, when women reach puberty. But there's also something else. I think it was declared as an intangible world heritage by UNESCO, was the Palabrero, which is literally, I guess, I mean, the literal translation is almost like a storyteller, but it's really a lawyer, right?
Yes, he's a lawyer. Okay. He's a lawyer. In the Wayunaiki, uh-huh. The Wayunaiki is the language of the Wayuu. They don't speak Spanish. Well, most of them, yes, but the official language is Wayunaiki. Palabrero is a Puchipu.
What's a Puchipu?
Puchipu is the name of the Palabrero. It's the Palabrero.
Okay.
So Puchipu is like a lawyer. Uh-huh. In a sense that the Puchipu, the Palabrero, is the administrator uh-huh. of the justice of the Wayuu people,
okay.
justice system.
Yeah.
So the role of the Palabrero is to solve conflict through mediations and negotiations. So this can include conflict between different members or clans of the Wayuu community, or with people or organizations outside the Wayuu people. So this negotiation include material compensation, uh-huh. not money, material compensation.
And so instead of money, what do they use?
They use chivo.
So goats?
Yeah, chivo, goats yeah. or vegetable uh-huh. Or the handicraft.
The handicraft
yes,
as well?
Yes, also okay. the handicraft, all yes. Right. You know, women, more handicraft has in the house and more is rich.
Okay.
It's like a dot. It's like her...
Dowry.
Dowry. Yeah, it's like her dowry.
Okay.
Yes,
so. And is that how, before we get on to the Palabreros more, is that how the marriages are arranged as well?
Yes.
With dowries of goats and jewelry and...
Yes.
And,
oh, okay. Yes. And most of the time, they decide when the girl is 10 or 12 years old.
They decide on the husband?
They decide, yeah, their husband before uh-huh. to prevent that the girl can be pregnant before they marry.
Okay.
Because happen, of course, in Guajira, the children, 12, 13 years old, they have baby.
Yeah.
So
we're talking about an extreme rural situation.
Sure. Ah, yeah.
Okay. And the Palabreros, so they're used, and again, incredibly important that they were recognized by UNESCO as a world, intangible world heritage. But they're used as lawyers. It's almost like mediation or alternative methods of conflict solving. And do they, I mean, what kind of... are there any penalties or punishments that are really, really harsh? I mean, if there was infidelity in a marriage, what would a Palabrero do in that situation?
Well, in this case, they have usually. In this society, the man is polygamo.
Okay,
can so have different wives,
yeah.
different women.
Yeah,
woman, no, she can't. So. The when happens something like women they're not infidelity
they're
usually.
Not unfaithful
no because they live really in their village all
uh-huh.
the time
yeah
they don't have the possibility
to leave
no to leave but you can see you can tell when you are there
uh-huh.
they don't have any possibility they don't want to
okay
but for example there are some very big when they have a very big problems uh-huh. through the clan
yeah
sometimes the palabrero can also, when the conflict is not adjust, they can decide with an extremely decision. Also killing.
Really? So they can actually have almost a death penalty.
Yes.
And in your experiences out there in the Guajira, have you been exposed to some of the palabreros?
Yes. Well, when I started this adventure with my foundation, of course I had some problem at the beginning because I'm a foreign. And so, you know, some men, they stolen me.
They stole the thread.
Thread
for the weaving.
For the weaving, and this is very, very a big, you know, it was a very big problem because my foundation, it's called Hilo Sagrado, that means sacred thread. Because for women, to weave the thread is sacred.
Yes.
For them, it's really sacred. When they touch the thread, they really feel the nature. They feel the life. So they stolen me, and at the beginning I didn't know how to do it, and so I said at the beginning, okay, I go to a lawyer, and they will look at me like, what, a lawyer? And then they explained me, no, you need a palabrero. But I said, but you can't, because you are a foreign, so you can't. And so I was really lost. I felt lost because I said, oh my God, how can I do now? So I couldn't do anything. After 2 years, now 2 years and a half, now I can say, well, if I have problem, I can go with a palabrero.
You've gained the trust.
Yeah, because I'm in the society now. Mm-hmm. They trust me.
Yeah.
And so, for example, happened something a few months ago.
Yeah.
And they asked me, do you want a palabrero? Yeah. And then I said, no. In one way, I want it just to have an experience. And usually it's the woman who goes to find the palabrero, has a long talk with the palabrero, because it's the woman in this society, the central of, this is the most important person in the village, the most important person in the society, in the culture.
Yes.
So it's the woman has to solve the problem and start to solve the problem.
Yes.
So it's the woman goes to the, usually called the palabrero, not the man. Oh. No, goes the woman.
Okay.
Sometimes woman has to walk a few days to go and find the palabrero. And another curiosity is that palabrero are different.
Yeah.
It's like our lawyer. We have a lawyer specialized in criminal law, and also palabrero they have different
specialized.
So if someone was killed, they have to call a special palabrero. If someone stolen, they have to call another palabrero.
Wow, so it's a very organized, that's a very special, almost an ancient culture.
Yeah.
And I just mentioned, as we're talking about the Guajira and the Wayuu, they were never conquered by the Spanish, were they, in the colonial period when the Spanish conquistadors came?
Yeah.
They managed to get a few to sort of, I think it was to go searching for pearls. But apart from that, the Wayuu always remained.
It always remains, yeah.
And that is, you can see that today in their independence. You know, they were never conquered by the Spanish, and subsequent waves of colonization have never taken over the area. So it's very.
They are very strong people, especially if you see where they live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you understand how strong they are.
Yes.
Because it's a deserted place; they don't have water. Or if it rains. Yeah. Rain so hard that there is an inundation. So they are used to live in a desert with a lot of sun. Mm. With they live land is full of cacti.
Yeah.
And so they use the cacti to build their house also.
Yeah.
So just to understand, it is a very, very difficult land.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? Because there's no water, there's cacti, there's thorn trees, lots of sand and sun. Yeah. I mean, it's unforgiving. It's unforgiving. So they are a very strong people. So we've been getting a little bit of an idea of the region, of the Guajira and the people that live there. In the next segment, we're going to talk more about Sabrina's foundation and what they do and what they're doing and how you can get in touch. So don't go away. I'm Richard McCall, and this is Columbia Calling.
Your expatriation destination. This is OverseasRadio.com.
Worried about rising taxes, costly insurance, out-of-control health care, economic decline, staggering debt, mortgages, and retirement? It doesn't have to be this way. Escape to Ecuador, one of the most beautiful countries on the planet, and at EcuadorAtYourService.com, be your guide. Ecuador has been named the number one retirement destination in the world 3 times in a row. So if you're searching for beaches, jungles, farmland, cities, affordable health care, and a richer lifestyle at half the cost, contact EcuadorAtYourService.com.
Searching for freedom? The sustainable community in Chile is found at FreedomOrchard.com. Quiet, peaceful, and pristine are some of Freedom Orchard's outstanding features. Freedom Orchard offers recreational activities, organic farming, and self-sufficiency for water and electricity. Well-known Chile expert, free market economist, and radio host of Red Hot Chile, Dr. John Coben, is heading a team of developers, organic farmers, and seasoned professionals to make Freedom Orchard a reality. FreedomOrchard.com, for when you're serious about your freedom.
Sit back and relax. You are tuned into the Overseas Radio Network.
And we're back. We're talking to Italian socio-anthropologist Sabrina Prioli. We've been talking about the Guajira region and the Wayuu people who live in this region, an unforgiving, harsh desert landscape out there near to Venezuela, the northernmost part of South America. Punta Gallinas is the tip of the continent, and that's where the Wayuu live. They live in all of this area, which is largely autonomous from the rest of Colombia. Now, some of you may have seen the Wayuu and the Guajira, let's say they're weaving, the artesanía that's on offer. I know that recently the mochilas, the bags, have become incredibly fashionable, these brightly colored, finely woven bags, and of course chinchorros, which are hammocks, and there's belts, and also cushions, but just weaving in general. And what we don't know, and what Sabrina is here to explain to us, is a little bit about the significance and the importance of these products. Sabrina, start with the mochilas, because everybody seems to like the mochilas, but they probably don't know what the design or the color represents on their mochilas.
Yeah. Well, as you told, knowing how to weave is a symbol of creativity, intelligence, and wisdom. Mm-hmm. So it's a practice that is passed from a generation to the next.
Yes.
That's this. So women, when they weave, they tell a story. They tell their life. Mm-hmm. They tell their daily life.
Yeah.
For example, I just give you an example to understand how they express themselves into the product.
Yeah.
So it was a woman. She gave me a bag, a mochila, mm-hmm. incredible, beautiful, with full of particular patterns.
Yes.
So with this bag, she wanted to represent her journey of a week to find the water. So she was traveling. She was walking with her donkey through the desert to find the water in the land.
Mm-hmm.
So when she came back, she wanted to tell me what happened, and so she started to weave a story. So, for example, in this bag, unfortunately, with the radio, you cannot see the product, but I try to explain. So this is the
dunes or the sand?
Her journey is represented with a bird.
Okay.
So there is the head of the bird. How do you say?
The claw.
The
claw. The foot. That's the foot of the bird.
Yeah, the foot of the bird.
Yeah.
Walking through the desert.
Uh-huh.
And every time, sometimes blocked in a circle,
mm-hmm.
is represented with a pattern. So. Mm. Circle pattern represent the place where is the water,
mm-hmm.
but through this desert there are a lot of colors. So She wanted to represent me the color of the sky, yes, during the sunset, during the sunshine, and her feeling, her emotion. Mm-hmm. So every bag has a really deep meaning. Uh-huh. There is a value yes, behind the bag.
And it's a value to the person weaving it. I mean, it's a really personal symbol of something.
Personal symbol.
Yeah, okay.
And so the foundation wanted, since the beginning, because this is my work,
yeah,
to save this practice.
Okay.
To recuperate, because they are losing their practice.
Yes.
Because there is an awesome massification of the mochila.
Yes.
So if you go in Guajira, you can find thousands of mochila on the street,
yes,
but without any meaning, because the women are paid very less.
Mm-hmm.
They have to produce a lot of mochila, and so they don't spend time, because yeah, they cannot spend time, and so they just do really easy pattern or nothing in
yeah,
the bag, and with the really low technique.
Yes.
So the foundation wants to recuperate the ancestral meaning, the uh-huh, ancestral technique. So we work in the foundation just with this very high quality technique.
Yes.
So the women, they can continue their tradition, they can continue to teach uh-huh, of their children, and so they cannot lose their, because the women, they just weave
yeah,
in their lives. They don't do anything.
Yeah. So weave, have babies, and weave again. And the colors are the sunrise and the sunset. And I know that you've got some bags, some of the mochilas, which you've put Swarovski crystal into,
yes,
them. Which,
well, also another thing I'm doing with my foundation is trying to change a bit, not change it, but transform the product with the... how, you know, in the western part,
yes,
they maybe don't like very, very strong colors.
Yes.
And so I'm trying to mix colors can like to the people. And so, but they have to, this color has to be strong, because
yeah,
I started, and I remember a period they were producing with very, like natural color.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, they stopped to work.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped to weave. And they say, Sabrina, for us, it's boring. Because we cannot express the nature. Because there, the nature really offers incredible colors.
Yes.
When you go in a sunshine, on a sunset, for example, in Cabo de la Vela, where you are in
yeah,
the top of the hills, and
yeah,
you see the beach and the sea, you see incredible colors. Incredible. Very strong, very...
vibrant.
Yes, and so they express their, you know, life in this way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also true that when before the normal cotton arrived mm-hmm, in the community, mm-hmm, they used to weave with the natural fibers.
Yes.
And with the wool of the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Or coloring with the seeds, flowers.
Yeah.
And so they also used to have,
yeah,
you know, natural colors,
yeah,
you know.
It's something more contemporary.
It's like
colors.
Contemporary, because yeah, in the ancestral way, they didn't use color.
Of course.
Or, of course, coffee color, or red, maybe for some flowers,
mm-hmm,
you know. And, for example... about the color they use for their face,
yes,
when there is a nice celebration,
uh-huh,
they paint their face with a special vegetable. They
uh-huh,
dry this fruit.
Yeah.
This fruit you can find just in Amazonia and in Guajira.
Uh-huh.
And so they paint their face, and every paint represents like a butterfly,
yeah,
or the cycle of life.
Yes.
So when this cycle of life is, when the woman is young,
mm-hmm,
the cycle is short. When it's old, the cycle is very long.
And the design is much larger.
Is much, yeah.
It's interesting, the symbolism in everything. And for a mochila, how long does it take to make one?
The original one
uh-huh,
takes about 20 or 30 days.
So it's a labor. I mean,
yeah,
this is really quite a dedication
yeah,
of making that. Now, and when you've got your chinchorros, your hammocks, your mochila, who are you selling these to?
Well, I'm trying to sell. I have a website,
yes,
but I don't have the paying system there, actually. So people, they write me, and then I send through. I send to North America, to Europe, but I also sell a lot here in Colombia, yeah, because people are recognizing that this is the real mochila, this is the real, the high quality mochila or chinchorro, whatever. Yeah. And so, for example, when I come back in Italy during the summer,
yeah,
the Italians love this kind of bag because we go to the beach, for example, and so it's perfect for for the beach, this kind of bag, for example. Good. But I also sell to people they want for their house something special, special cushion, special puff, special hammock, you know.
So it's something for anything. But now I want to move on, because you're talking, the foundation is really important, and we've got to talk about this a little bit more, because you're recuperating, you're rescuing, some ancient practices. But you've also, started a cultural exchange program between, I guess, YU children and some children in Finland, of all places. I
mean, and in Spain.
And in Spain. So I mean, why is it so interesting for, let's say, children from Finland?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because they can learn how indigenous children, they live in a rural context.
Yes.
Because they cannot believe that children, they can live, can sleep in an hammock, and they can spend their day doing artisan craft, or for boys, looking for the goat. So for example, I started this exchange to help these ethno-educational schools. As I told you before, they are really extremely poor, so children, they don't have anything in the school. They don't have pen, they don't have colors, they don't have books, nothing. This is nice, because once I put in Facebook a picture with the guy, with a boy, with the something that was like a ball. What remains of a ball.
Yeah, so like a football, but destroyed.
Completely destroyed, but they were happy with this ball.
Yeah.
So this picture, video where it's shown a daily life of a boy or a girl, help children in the West Country to see what there is in another part of the world, how they live, what they express with their, for example, it was an event one day, all the children, they did a painting. So I told them, express your day, express your life.
Yeah.
And they express it, really what they do. And so artisan craft and colors of the nature, sleeping in the hammock, cooking with the fire, they don't have any gas, anything. So it's nice, because maybe the same question to a child in a Western country, maybe they paint their life, so a car, the house with the bed,
the computer,
so, the phone.
Yeah.
So I will, the exchange is that the children in the Western country, they see this video, they see this painter, they see the, for example, the fabulous, the Fabio, la fabula.
The stories or legends.
The legend. Yeah. And they try to compare their life with the life of the indigenous children. And then also the Western country, the children there, they do their work.
Yeah.
And when I go in Guaira, I show to the children, for example, they don't know which is the snow.
Yeah.
So I will show them the snow, the picture, the video.
And certainly in Finland, they know what snow is. And now you've got one big project, and you need to raise money for this, and you want to create a recreation center.
Yeah, I want to create a recreation center for children, because they cannot play.
Yeah.
When I go there, they told me, the first things they say, The first thing they say when I'm when I go in Guajira is, "Hi, Sabrina, can you teach us how to play?"
Uh-huh.
Because they don't play, and the parents, they don't play with them.
So.
And so when I go in the school, I don't see anything mm-hmm. for children. And so I would like to create a recreation center where children, they can learn,
yeah.
play, and paint, you mm-hmm. know, express themselves. And we need money, of course. We need, in pesos, it's in 10,000 of peso.
10 million?
10 million
yeah.
is like around $5,000,
yeah.
something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we say from $1 to $1 to raise money to build this, this house for children.
Ah, well, I think it's a fantastic initiative. And if you want to get in touch with Sabrina, of course, they're on Facebook. Just check out Hilo Sagrado. Also, there's a website. It's www.hilosagrado.net.
Or org.
They're both there. And of course, you get in touch with her. You're talking to the boss. So, you know, she'll answer and she'll get in touch. And, of course, check out the incredibly high-quality products that she's got here and the projects that she's doing. So I'll just take this moment to say thank you very much for being on the show, Sabrina, and sharing your enthusiasm with us about the Guajira. And so maybe when we hear later down the line that you've got the recreation center built or the money has been received, you'll be back here on the show to tell us all about it.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and welcome to Guajira, or for all the people that want to come to visit the village.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And this has been Richard McCall talking on Columbia Calling, speaking to Sabrina Prioli about the Guajira. Thank you.
Live call-in shows and hosts from your favorite countries. This is the Overseas Radio Network.